The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from National Geographic Traveler and AAA Go Magazine. Before we start our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, we want to remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to read. They are chosen solely for your enjoyment and edification. Well, how many cities have you visited in your travels? In the February-March 2018 issue of National Geographic Traveler, writer Jennifer Barger compiled a list of cities on the rise. Now, as the opening caption to the cover photo declares, we take measure of America's best small cities and discover the superlatives of 29 surprising destinations. Editor-in-Chief George Stone introduces the article, explaining how they created their list of cities. And it begins with a question. What's the most exciting travel story in America? The resurgence of cities, large and small. It's a subject we've tracked closely, celebrating the successes of cities that showcase the American knack for reinvention, from Asheville, North Carolina, and Madison, Wisconsin, to Santa Cruz, California. At Traveler, we're passionate about tales of urban renewal, about communities that have collaborated to improve their main streets, about smart cities that have pursued development policies that produce happiness. In this story, we report on eminently visitable smaller cities that embody a thematic superlative measured by our data-loving friends at Renaissance Consultancy. Now, there is a parenthetical remark here. It says, see crunching the numbers right. So let us go there and tell you a little more about, in detail, about what they did to get this list. What if a synthesis of social media reviews and statistics could help you decide which smaller U.S. city to visit? That's the idea behind Renaissance Consultancy New Small Cities Index, a survey created just for Traveler. A global advisor in tourism and economic development, Renaissance combined core statistics with social media data on nightlife, culture, restaurants, and the like to come up with categorical rankings of metro areas with populations of no more than a million people. By mining Yelp, Instagram, and other sources, Renaissance determined leaders in categories from meatiest, lots of steakhouses and delis, to greenest, most parkland, based on per capita results. It's a holistic picture of cities based on what people say in reviews, says Renaissance CEO Chris Fair. It's consumer-generated but objective. On the following pages, In Focus, which is one of the titles of each of the segments, looks closely at one of the top-rated cities identified by Renaissance, and then there's a second segment called Trending, which spotlights what the editors pick for a city on the rise. Now, back to George's main article. Our index is based on unconventional metrics that we think lead to happiness, green spaces, galleries, coffee shops, breweries, music venues, Instagrammable moments, and more. Next, we sorted U.S. cities into three groups based on their population, 40,000 to 100,000, or 40K to 100K, and then 100K to 200K, and 200K to 600K. Renaissance applied its own algorithms to surface the cities that rate highest. Finally, Traveler editors added a trending city, towns that didn't make Renaissance's final cut this year, but look as if they could in 2019, so keep your eye on them. The achievements of the small cities we highlight might reflect the influence of demographic measurements that are increasingly guiding urban development policies. It came as no surprise to us that six places on our list, and they are Boulder, Colorado, Honolulu, Hawaii, Charlottesville, Virginia, Santa Cruz, Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Portland, Maine, also appear on a National Geographic list of the 25 happiest cities in America. That study, guided by the best-selling Blue Zones author Dan Buettner and Gallup ShareCare's social scientists, established 15 metrics that signal well-being, vacation days, for example, and drew on nearly 250,000 interviews in 190 metropolitan areas to determine cities where locals are measurably happy. Happiness is not of coincidence, but instead is the result of the conscious effort of enlightened leaders to make decisions that improve the quality of life for locals, Buettner told us. We have identified common development indicators that have produced measurable happiness in cities, so we have a better idea of what policies are more likely to produce happiness, and these can serve as a guiding light to other communities that are seeking to improve quality of life, he noted. Happy places for locals also reward travelers, and we hope our list inspires enlightening discoveries. And again, George Stone, editor-in-chief, the writer of that particular piece. And now on to the cities, and we want to, again, remember, as we list each one, the first of the three is going to be one for the 40,000 to 100,000 population. Next will be 100K to 200K, and then the third one is 200K to 600K, again, population categories. Now, writer Jennifer Barger is going to then spotlight or put in focus one of the cities, and she'll add another unlisted city called Trending, and which is showing signs it's definitely going to meet the measures that have been used to choose these cities. And the first heading we come to is most hipster friendly. Guess who's on top? Hickory, North Carolina, just passed through there recently. Boulder, Colorado is next, and Spokane, Washington. Hickory in that 40K to 100K category, Boulder in the 100 to 200, and then Spokane in the 200 to 600 category. Now, the in focus is Spokane, Washington. A high count of record stores, tattoo parlors, vintage clothing boutiques, and coffee shops per capita boost Washington State's second largest city to the top of our hipster-friendly list for its population category. Bearded and flannel-wearing locals often show up at Garageland, a gastropub vinyl store downtown. Note the dugout canoe hanging over the bar. Summertime outdoor music festivals bring bands and local brews to Riverfront Park, a 100-acre playground along the Spokane River. Then Trending is New Orleans, Louisiana. Celebrating the 300th anniversary of its founding by the French in 1718, New Orleans still brims with authentic charm, but is especially of the moment in the warehouse district around Lafayette Square. One-time grain and coffee storehouses have been converted into trendy bars, music clubs, and restaurants. A sacalé, a local hyper bistro fare like alligator and pickled mustard sauce, is served in a restored cotton mill. Hipster Grand Central, the new Ace Hotel, in a renovated Art Deco mid-rise where the action centers on a busy lobby with a curated musical stage that hosts local acts. There's sometimes a wait to get into the Alto, the hotel's happening rooftop bar, so consider heading to the nearby Cellar Door and its courtyard for drinks and small bites. Now, how about the musically grooviest? And here's the list, starting with the smallest populations and then higher. Santa Cruz, California, Boulder, Colorado, and Honolulu, Hawaii. Excuse me. Well, in focus is Santa Cruz, California. Thanks to a clutch of music and record stores and live music venues, the beach towns of Santa Cruz rates grooviest for rock and folk fans. At Streetlight Records, new and used CDs and LPs fill a warehouse-like space where local bands frequently gig. The starving musician sells African drums and electric guitars. The new Abbott Square restaurant in Market Zone downtown offers free Saturday night concerts, and the long-running Catalyst Club hosts big-name bands on the site of a former bowling alley. Located on California's wind-blown central coast south of San Francisco, Santa Cruz also lures surfers with easy-riding waves and nostalgia buffs and families with its retro boardwalk, which dates to 1907. The latter presents modern amusements as well as the Giant Dipper, a 1924 wooden roller coaster, and the 1911 Loof Carousel, where painted horses bob to antique band organ tunes. And trending under musically grooviest is Omaha, Nebraska. Indie rock bands thrive in this Midwestern hub due in part to some homegrown label Saddle Creek, which reps national acts like Bright Eyes and The Faint. Both local and national musician headline next door at the Slowdown, a concert hall just north of Old Market, Omaha's cobblestone historic district, now vibrant with restaurants, boutiques, and coffee shops. Then on to the most Instagram community, and the three are Portland, Maine, Charleston, South Carolina, Honolulu, Hawaii, and in focus, Portland, Maine. Red lobsters on the plate, painted fishing boats in the harbor, and salty lighthouses on rugged shores make Maine's photogenic biggest city top the list in a number of Instagram hashtags. We have all four seasons here, which means the environments to shoot are constantly changing, says local photographer Corey Templeton. Plus, the ocean reflects light in such a pretty way. Possible photo shoot settings nearby Fort Williams Park, home to the 80-foot-tall circa 1791 Portland headlight, and hashtag oldest in the state will get you more on that, especially as waves break on the rocks beneath, or the old port neighborhood with its cobblestone streets, and 19th-century brick buildings and picturesque wharves. Trending under most Instagram, Rapid City, South Dakota. George Washington and Ronald Reagan stand across the street from each other in this South Dakota city near Mount Rushmore, or rather their bronze life-size statues do, just begging to be posed with. The ongoing public art history project called City of Presidents has been erecting likenesses of each commander-in-chief on downtown corners since 2000. Visitors can sidle up to Franklin D. Roosevelt at a podium or high-five Chester Arthur, or when the statue arrives this spring, hug a grinning Barack Obama. Topping a near hill nearby, the Depression-era dinosaur park lures families with its whimsical, if biologically inaccurate, concrete models of T-Rex and other dinos, plus dazzling views of the Black Hills and Badlands beyond. Now we move to the most artsy category, Asheville, North Carolina, just there a few days ago, Charleston, South Carolina, and Honolulu, Hawaii. In focus is Charleston, South Carolina. Works by local artists will fill the rooms and public spaces of the new Hotel Bennett, opening this summer on a chunk of prime real estate overlooking Marion Square. It's a great crash pad for checking out Charleston's booming art scene, which ranks high in our survey because of a large number of schools and galleries like the Art Institute of Charleston and Helena Fox Fine Art. The latter specializes in works by Southern artists such as West Fraser, known for his muted paintings of nearby Lowcountry. Performing arts shine at the grand 3-year-old Gaillard Center, which hosts concerts and dance shows and serves as one of the venues for the city's celebrated Spoleto Festival, taking place May 25th to June 10th this year. Trending under most artsy, Kansas City, Missouri. Depression-era painter Thomas Hart Benton called this mid-sized Missouri city home, perhaps igniting the town's artistic fervor. Visit his home studio, note the coffee cans full of paintbrushes, or view his romanticized images of local people and landscapes at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Then we have the best groomed category. Hagerstown, Maryland, Columbia, South Carolina, and Baton Rouge, Louisiana. In focus, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Black and red linoleum floors and vintage swivel chairs summon up the 1920s founding of the historically African-American Webb's Barbershop in Louisiana's capital city. It's one of an unusually high number of hair salons and grooming spots that let the good-looking times roll in this relaxed, sprawled along the sprawled along the Mississippi River. Louisiana State University students, a well-dressed lot and known for donning frocks and cowboy boots or iron polos for football games, often get shaves and haircuts at Mercer Supply Company. The loft-like salon and barbershop is at 1010 Nick, a new complex of old warehouses with indie retailers between LSU and downtown. Now, trending in the best groomed category, Newport, Rhode Island. Antique carriages, fine horses, and dandily dressed carriage attendants in top hats bring a raffish charm to the weekend of coaching, a triennial festival to be held August 16th through 19th in this year. The coaches come, some dating to the early 19th century, roll through the city and stop at mansion museums, including the Vanderbilt's lavish clifftop, the Breakers. An apropos spot to pamper yourself before the event, the spa at the 1875 Castle Hill Inn. Now we move to a category for you who love to travel for food. It's the meatiest category. Topping the list, Greenville, South Carolina, followed by Columbia, South Carolina, and then Reno, Nevada. In Focus, Reno, Nevada, our large total of butchers, delis, and steak restaurants per capita helps make this mountain city among the meatiest in the U.S. Take Harrah's Steakhouse, where they've been serving fillets and T-bones since 1937. While the Red Meat Palace in Harrah's Casino has had modern renovations, tuxedoed waiters and retro dishes, baked Alaska, oysters Rockefeller, to name a couple, keep the place feeling decidedly nostalgic. A forward-looking food and drink scene stakes its claim with Nothing to It, a cooking school gourmet deli, and the Eddy, a popular new outdoor hangout and beer garden with a synthetic turf lawn and recycled shipping containers. Now trending under medias, Louisville, Kentucky. The hot brown and open-faced turkey and bacon sandwich napped in Mornay sauce is a synonymous with Louisville as bluegrass and bourbon. Bite into one where it was invented, the restored 1923 Brown Hotel. But recently, Country Ham, a.k.a. Hillbilly Prosciutto, has been captivating Kentucky chefs. Sample a flight of the salty sweet stuff at the Garage Bar. Eat it with bourbon to cut through the marbled fats, as local food writer Steve Combs, who penned a book on Country Ham. Well, now we move ahead to the most caffeinated. Okay, coffee drinkers, you ready for this? Olympia, Washington, in the smallest category of population. The next, Boulder, Colorado, and Spokane, Washington, at the top there. In focus is Boulder. There seem to be as many coffee shops as cyclists in this mountain city, home to the University of Colorado Boulder, so it's no surprise that several combo Java joint bike shops have opened recently. On downtown's main Pearl Street track, there's At Full Cycle, where you can buy wheels and gear or have a latte or local beer. Cycling clubs, usually still in their workout gear, crowd the minimalist cafe bike shop Rafa for espresso, pre-ride waffles, and post-ride pastries. Boulder also is home to herbal specialty tea business Celestial Seasonings. Daily free tours of the working factory include unlimited samples, a look at how tea is bagged, and stops at the aromatic mint room. Trending under the most caffeinated category is Anchorage, Alaska. With 5.98 coffee shops for every 10,000 residents, Alaska's largest city and cruise ship port percolates with caffeine culture. Drive-up espresso shacks keep company with brick-and-mortar Java shops like Steam Dot for pour-over brews and the Kaladi Brothers, which boast a toast rather beans with a Civet's fluid bed roaster, a contraption that uses fresh hot air to produce smooth blends. Ooh. Now we have the most dog-friendly. Pensacola, Florida, Lakeland, Florida, and Reno, Nevada top this list, and in focus is Pensacola, Florida. Paw prints show up on Greater Pensacola's ethereal white sand beaches thanks to two dedicated dog parks in the Gulf of Mexico. Pooches are also welcome on the red brick sidewalks of Palafax Street, place in the historic downtown where 18th to 20th century buildings embellished with ironwork balconies house galleries, shops, and restaurants, some with dog-friendly outdoor cafes. Restaurants that allow pups as well as a large number of pet shops and grooming spots help the city top the list. Plus, each Saturday morning, the Palafax Market features dozens of vendors offering local produce and crafts. Now, trending under most dog-friendly is Annapolis, Maryland. The dog-friendly streets of Maryland's brick-lined capital yield ye olde colonial charm, after all. The domed statehouse, which dates to 1772, is the country's oldest in continuous use. Fido can't come in during the guided tours, but many of the city's lively harborfront restaurants allow dogs on their patios, including the Middleton Tavern, where George Washington and founding fathers once slurped oysters. Then we have the sudsiest. Asheville, North Carolina, Boulder, Colorado, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and in focus is Asheville. More than three dozen breweries and brew pubs, the most per capita of any U.S. city, work hoppy magic in and around this North Carolina town. Many cluster in the South Slope, a former automotive zone, where you can now walk between spots like Wicked Weed's Funkatorium, a sour ale specialist, and Catawba Brewing Company with a spacious deck boasting views of Mount Pisgah. Beer tours also soak up the scene. Brewed walks led by beer sommeliers called Ciceronis include tastings, local history, and technical aspects of sudscrafting. And let's see here. The goofy-looking, amazing pup cycle. It caught my eye there. I said, woo. A pedal-powered trolley lets groups transport themselves between breweries. That ought to be an interesting feat. Plus, local drafts show up with lots of cuisine. Highland Brewing's black mocha stout-flavored scoops at Ultimate Ice Cream and sugary beer glazes at Vortex Donuts. Woo. Trending for Sudsius is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Though Pittsburgh's iconic Iron City Ale is now produced an hour away in Latrobe, the Berg is home to more than 30 craft breweries. Many of the suds are made and poured in rehabbed historic buildings, such as a decommissioned 1902 Catholic Church, Church Brew Works, the title, and a 19th century school, 11th Hour Brewing Company. In the pipeline, a 50,000 square foot brew pub museum. Then finally, Greenest, Olympia, Washington, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Madison, Wisconsin. Now in focus is Madison, Wisconsin, the compact downtown and imposing state house of Wisconsin's capital city, crown a strip of land between Lakes Mendota and Monona. This means its many parks, 11.6 per 10,000 residents and trails, come with stellar water views and a bike-friendly culture. They snowplow the bike trails here, says resident Jennifer Dreyfus, who, like many locals, cycles to work. You can walk or pedal Madison B-Cycle, which has wheels for rent, to green spots, such as the University of Wisconsin Arboretum. Here, prairie grasslands and lilacs fill 1,200 acres, and free guided Sunday walks take in features like effigy mounds, ancient earthworks built around 1,000 years ago, the new 200-mile Frank Lloyd Wright driving trail through southern Wisconsin pinpoints multiple buildings designed by the Wisconsin-born architect, including the cabin-like First Unitarian Society and the lakeside Monona Terrace in Madison. Trending under the greenest is Healdsburg, California. Though last summer's wildfires devastated acres of Sonoma County, thanks to ample irrigation and spaced-out grape plantings, Healdsburg's vineyards were mostly spared. Neighbors banded together to put out blazes, and the inns, shops, and tasting rooms of this walkable town are now open for business, including the newish Locavore Single Thread Farms, which serves an 11-course Japanese-accented tasting menu in warm, wood-filled spaces and has 5 guest rooms upstairs. Well, there you go, your friendly cities there all across America. Plenty of places to choose from, huh? Well, Katie McElveen is going to lead us on a tour of a Caribbean island that has ties to a popular Broadway show. Her article, Hamilton's Nevis, is in the March-April 2018 issue of AAA Go Magazine. Often overshadowed by its glitzier Caribbean neighbors, Nevis led a quiet existence until 2015, when the blockbuster play Hamilton premiered on Broadway. 3 years later, the island buzzes with Hamilton buffs, called Hamil fans, in search of bits of information about the early life of America's first Treasury Secretary. Along the way, the island's stunning beaches, lush, jungly interior, and elegant plantation inns offer a glimpse into the quarter side of the Caribbean. I know him. We're zooming down one of Nevis's notoriously steep hills when our guide, Wilma Gaskin, signals for us to stop our bikes and pull up beside what looks like the ruins of an old factory. Filled with crumbling brick buildings, thick vines, and trampled grass, the lot doesn't seem worthy of exploration. But then, one of the Hamil fans among us spots the historic marker that identifies the place as Hamilton Estate, and the cameras start clicking. As we walk toward a tall chimney, Gaskin explains that although Alexander Hamilton, who was born on the island, probably never visited this former sugar plantation, it was owned by a member of the Hamilton family until the 1950s. At one time, there was more than 200 sugar plantations on Nevis Island, and this was considered the most modern, he says, as he points to several large pieces of machinery. The gears used to process the sugar cane were imported from Scotland, home of Alexander Hamilton's father, James, he notes. We had started our cycle tour that morning from Mount Pierre Plantation and Beach, a relay and chateau property in the breezy foothills of Nevis Peak. Led by longtime employee and Nevis native Ramel Gaskin, the resort's new outdoor adventure program lets guests create their own guided hiking, strolling, or cycling itineraries. We'd chosen a general island tour that started at the resort and ended with lunch at Malpelia's private beach club and thankfully transport back to the resort. Guests can also hike hilly trails past plantation ruins and waterfalls, ride horses, or cycle to nearby settlements and restaurants. Our next stop was Charlestown, a neat town that was settled in 1660 and is home to a Saturday morning farmers market, a few restaurants, including the notable Café des Arts, with its colorful outdoor patio and bright paintings, and a trove of Hamilton sites and lore. History has its eyes on you. Start with the Museum of Nevis History, which is located within the Alexander Hamilton Birthplace, a Georgian-style building restored in the 1980s after the original was destroyed in an earthquake in 1840. After taking the requisite tourist shot, slip inside, where you can listen to the Hamilton soundtrack as you explore exhibits detailing Hamilton's early life and the role the island played in his development as a statesman and patriot. If there's time, meander over to the Jewish Cemetery, where 19 gravestones dating from 1679 to 1730 are all that's left of the island's once thriving Jewish community. There's also a link to Hamilton, who, as the son of unmarried parents, was not allowed to be educated in Nevis's Christian schools. Instead, he was said to have attended a Jewish school where he learned both Hebrew and French. It's quite likely that he walked along the Jews' Walk, which runs between the graveyard and what many believe to be the site of Nevis Jewish School and Synagogue. Leaving Charlestown, we headed north along the coastal road to Nevisian Artisan Village, a collection of Sherbet-colored wooden buildings, each housing a local artist. Sipping a tangy drink made with local tamarind, we looked at and purchased jewelry, wood carvings, and paintings. There's also a large gallery where carpenters build everything from mahogany and frames to hand-turned vases. We also passed by the island's soothing natural hot springs and St. Thomas's Lowland Church, which was built in 1643 and was the first Anglican church in the Caribbean. Again, I go back to point out that Caribbean's first preferred. You could also say Caribbean. A slight left took us into the shady thicket with a dirt road that led to Malpelia's Beach Club, a sun-drenched oasis with bar service, showers, bathroom facilities, lounge chairs, and a covered patio. After cooling off with fresh mango daiquiris, we tucked into a picnic lunch that had been delivered just before we arrived. After a quick swim, we caught the shuttle for the 15-minute ride back to Malpelia. Meet me inside. Located on the site of a 1747 sugar plantation, Malpelia is not a typical island resort. Just 19 rooms and suites dot the 60-acre property, which is set with an oversized mosaic pool, a 300-year-old sugar mill that's been transformed into an intimate dining room, an outdoor spa, and a charismatic manor house crafted from local stone and inhabited by Cosmo, the owner's friendly yellow lab. Pilates and yoga classes are held in a restored barn that fronts a cool green lawn shaded by mango trees. Towering above it all stands Nevis Peak, a 3,232-foot mountain embroidered with trails that lead through the rainforest to uninterrupted vistas of Saba and St. Kitts. Quiet and cultivated, it feels like part of the landscape. Once again, taking advantage of the resort's outdoor program. So lots of fun there, and the end of our journey for today. We hope you have enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next week for the Triangle Radio Reading Service's Armchair Traveler. The content of our program intended for people who are blind and print impaired to broadcast readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.